Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on Aero. Presented by Ger Sweeney.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to another edition of Live on Aero, the Irish programme. I do hope I find you well. I hope you've had a good week, and I hope you're looking forward to the programme as much as I am. Now, today, I'm going to be talking to a man by the name of John Egan. John presented a fabulous talk last week in Ennistymon and County Clare back in Ireland about the O'Hooney brothers from Kilchenny, or the Green brothers. Their name was Green, but in Irish, it's O'Hooney. And he had a wonderful audience there. They were captivated by the discussion. Roger Comiskey, our friend here on the programme, was at that and contacted me. So I thought I'd like to talk to John because there's a great connection between the O'Hooney brothers and Spain. We'll find out more during the programme. Barbara Wood from Tourism Ireland. She's based in Madrid. She'll be talking to us about the greening of various iconic buildings around the world in honour of St. Patrick and celebrating St. Patrick's Day with us Irish. She'll be talking to us about other things as well. Some great music on the programme. I'll have the number one song from Ireland on this very day back in 1979, and we'll have our famous Irish birthdays as well. It is hard to believe that we are into March already, isn't it? The 2nd of March, St. Patrick's Day, only 15 days away. There's plenty to be done yet before all of that. If you would like to contact the programme at any stage over the next 7 days, or indeed at any stage, you can email ger, G-E-R, at tre.radio. G-E-R at tre.radio. It's as simple as that. Will we start with the famous Irish birthdays like we normally do? Alrighty. It was on this day, the 2nd of March, back in 1948, that Rory Gallagher, the blues and rock guitarist and singer, was born in Donegal. The 3rd is tomorrow. Brian Kerr, soccer manager, born in Dublin in 1953. Ollie Campbell, the rugby player, born in Dublin in 1954. Ronan Keating, singer with Boyzone, solo singer, artist as well, born in Dublin on that day in 1977. Ben Dunn, the Irish businessman. His father would have been the man that started Dunn Stores all those years ago. Well, Ben Dunn was born in Dublin on that day in 1949. And Peter O'Sullivan, horse racing commentator, the voice of horse racing sometimes called, he was born in Kinmare in County Kerry in 1918. Let's see what day we have then. We have Wednesday, the 4th of March. Robert Emmett, the Patriot, was born in 1778. Sir Patrick Moore, broadcaster and astronomer, born in 1923. Grace Gifford Plunkett, Irish Patriot, was born in Dublin in 1888. And Seamus Power, wonderful golfer, born in Waterford in 1987. I got to see Seamus play a couple of holes during the Irish Open in Lahinch in County Clare last year. And great to see him on the up, which is nice. Wish Seamus happy birthday on the day. Right, the Thursday is the 5th. Finbar Clancy, a musician and singer with the High Kings. A great musician, great entertainer, and a lovely fella as well. In fact, all the lads from the High Kings, lovely lads. I had the pleasure of introducing them on stage on a number of occasions. Well, Finbar was born in Tipperary in 1970. Ronnie Delaney, the Irish athlete who won gold in 1956 at the Melbourne Olympics in the 1500 metres. Well, he was born in Arklow in 1935. On the 6th of March, J.J. Delaney, the Kilkenny hurler in Johnstown, 1982. Johnstown, County Kilkenny, of course, is where J.J. was born on the 6th of March, 1982. Patrick McCall, wonderful songwriter, born in Dublin in 1861. Who was he, do you reckon? Well, I'm going to play a track from him very soon. Well, sorry, a track, not from him, but from a song that he wrote that I think you will recognise. Niall McGarry, businessman, very much associated with the website joe.ie, born in Castlebar in 1978. Next Saturday is the 7th, and Paddy Clancy, one of the Clancy brothers, born in 1922. He and Finbar Clancy would be nephew and uncle, as far as I would be aware. Eilish Dillam, the writer, born in Galway in 1920. And finally, we go to next Sunday, which is the 8th of March. Francis McManus, the novelist, was born in 1909 on that day. Northern Ireland politician Paddy Devlin was born in Belfast in 1925. Nora Jane Noon, an actor that you may recall from the Magdalen Laundries and from Brooklyn. Well, she was born in Galway in 1984. And finally, Una Mullally, journalist in Ireland, born on that day in 1983. So there we go. That's a quick look at some of the famous Irish people whose birthdays occur in the coming week. I did tell you we'd take a track from a man by the name of Patrick McCall. He wrote a number of songs, particularly associated with Wexford and all that area, and uprisings and things like that. But he was born, as I said, on the 6th of March in 1861. And he wrote this song, which is called Bula Vogue. And it has been sung by many people, but I really believe that there's only one man to sing that song. And here he is, Brendan Boyer.
At Boulevard, when the sun was setting for the bride May meadows of Chevalier, a rebel hand set the heather blazing and brought the neighbors from far and near. Then Father Murphy from old Kilcormac spurred up the rock with a warning cry. Arm, arm, he cried, for I've come to lead you for Ireland's freedom. We'll fight or die. He led us on against the coming soldiers and the cowardly yeomen. We put to flight. 'Twas at the Harrow the boys of Wexford shook the king's regiment. How men could fight. Look out for hirelings, King George of England. Search every kingdom where breeds a slave. For Father Murphy from County Wexford sweeps o'er the land like a mighty wave. At Vinegar Hill, for the pleasant slainy, our hero vainly stood back to back. The yeoman's at Tala to Father Murphy unburned his body upon the rack. God grant you glory, brave Father Murphy, and open heaven to all will call tomorrow for Ireland's freedom. We'll fight or die.
A fabulous song from a fabulous entertainer, Brendan Boyer, and a song called Bula Vogue, written by Patrick McCall, who was born in Dublin in 1861 on the 6th of March. So we mark his birthday this coming week. So there you have it. Right, that's the first part. Done and dusted. Kind of painless, really, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. I'll be talking to Barbara Wood from Tourism Ireland about the greenings across the world for St. Patrick's Day and other things too. So please, don't go anywhere.
Live on Era, presented by Jer Sweeney.
With St. Patrick's Day just around the corner, I did mention at the top of the programme that many of the iconic buildings around the world will again in 2020 be turning green in honour of St. Patrick and by way of celebrating with the Irish. Joining me on the phone right now is the Tourism Ireland manager in Spain, Barbara Wood, no stranger to the programme. Barbara, lovely to talk to you again. How are you?
And you, thank you, Ger. Yeah, great. All good here in Madrid today.
It's an extremely busy time in the run-up to St. Patrick's Day for Tourism Ireland because it's a great opportunity just to promote everything that's Irish, isn't it?
It really is, particularly the timing of it in March when people are starting to think about holidays. So we're very lucky to be able to leverage that and get people thinking about Ireland and visiting the country. And lots happening. There's obviously the greenings, but our offices around the world will be running receptions for tour operators, for media. We'll be sending media into Ireland. We'll be doing lots of digital activity as well, social media. So, it's a busy time for us, but we can't complain. It's great stuff.
There's Irish people all over the world. And in fact, the more I do this programme, the more I realise that people, you know, aren't just travelling since the invention of the aeroplane. We've been coming to Spain, we've been going around the world, you know, since time started, really. Is Ireland an easy sell, or do you have to work really hard at it?
You know, I think it depends what country you are in terms of their level of knowledge and awareness. Talking from a Spanish perspective, we're pushing an open door. People love Ireland. People are really interested. Of course, so many people have had experience of learning English in Ireland and return with their families, or equally have had really positive experiences of all the Irish people coming to the Costa and the different islands. And I think that that's a very similar case across Europe and the United States. It's probably a little bit different in, you know, places like, you know, the Far East or even, you know, Latin America. Although looking at the list of the greenings, I mean, it's just phenomenal and so proud to be Irish when you see that we're going to have greenings taking place in over 40 countries.
Wow.
And looking at the list, as expected in the US and in Great Britain and all of Europe, but then lots in Latin America. So you've got Chile, you've got Colombia, you've got Argentina, happening in Thailand as well and Japan. I just think that's amazing. It's a real credit to Irish people, and then the grow or the love that people have for Irish people, that effectively, you know, Tourism Ireland will at times pay costs in terms of, you know, physical labour to change filters and things like that.
Right.
But in the main, no fees are being exchanged. And you know, generally, not all monuments can do it for various reasons, but generally, people are really, really pleased to do this. And we already have 300 sites confirmed for this year, and lots come in kind of closer to the day. And I think we're hopeful. I think we had something like 470, 480 last year, and we're hopeful of getting up to over 500. So again, thinking of a small country on the west of Europe and the global impact that we have is just fantastic.
It is phenomenal. Is there a lot of work that has to be done by Tourism Ireland to make this happen? Or is a lot of that done on the ground with Irish people and maybe local offices?
It's a combination. Tourism Ireland has a presence in 23 countries across the world. So in those countries, certainly here in Spain, there would be quite a lot that is done. You have to approach the local authorities. You have to get the appropriate permissions. Equally, when we get notification of the greenings and in the lead up to St. Patrick's Day, we would do a lot of PR work and press releases and things like that to sort of get the coverage. But we are very, very reliant as well on the Irish people on the ground, and indeed the Irish Embassy, who are great friends of the initiative. And in countries where Tourism Ireland doesn't have a presence, they have done fantastic work. But again, yes, the Irish diaspora, Irish people all over the world. And I think that's where you can see, certainly in South America or in some of the other countries where we don't have embassies or Tourism Ireland offices, there are great numbers of people getting greenings, like down in the south of Spain as well.
Yeah.
That's all as a result of the great work of Irish people.
All right. And speaking about Ireland and the connection between Ireland and Spain, a lot of people have the numbers increased of people travelling, Spaniards travelling to Ireland?
They have indeed, although last year we maintained, so we didn't increase, but we didn't decrease, which was a really good performance because we have over the last 15 years, we've increased exponentially. Well, 18, 20 years, look, going back to the year 2000, we had about 90,000 visitors from Spain. But last year we had 440,000 visitors. So that will just give you a sense of the increase. And again, Spanish people love Ireland and we've got quite a high rate of repeat visitors. So at least 25% of our visitors are Spanish people returning to Ireland on their holidays, which I think says it all that so many people would go back.
And I know that you're working again this year with the Irish Association of Spain over the St. Patrick's weekend, I suppose, celebrations, because last year you started with a trip for two people to Ireland, which was given away. And there was great interest in that. And I know that in 2020, you're revisiting that. So an additional two heading in the direction because of the efforts.
Exactly. Yeah. So delighted to support the work of the association, and it's great coverage for ourselves as well. So it's a win-win and a double win for the lucky winners who get to
Absolutely.
Go and visit Ireland.
Absolutely. And I'll give more information later on in the programme about that particular initiative. Well, Barbara, it's lovely talking to you as per usual. I'm glad that things are going well in terms of spreading the word of Ireland and the Irish along the way. And thank you very much for joining us and talking to us about the greening. I look forward to chatting to you again at some point in the future.
A pleasure, Gerard. Thanks to you.
Thanks a million.
I love it when we do what we do when we do. I love it when we do what we do when we do.
and a song that's called I Love It When We Do. Thank you to, oh, by the way, I play that because tomorrow is Ronan Keating's birthday. He was born in Dublin in 1977, so happy birthday to Ronan for that. Thank you to Barbara Wood for joining us from Madrid, from Tourism Ireland. And while I know that she mentioned that there would be familiarisation trips for tour operators and for media over the next wee while in relation to celebrating St. Patrick's weekend, we also know that there are restrictions that will affect some of those, but it wasn't the interview to get into all of that on the coronavirus, and that's why I stayed away from it, all right, because you need up-to-date information if you're going to get into that kind of sphere in relation to different things that are happening. All right, so thank you to Barbara for taking time to talk to us. Now, we also mentioned in the interview that there was a trip to Ireland up for grabs in association with the Irish Association here in Spain, particularly along the Costa del Sol. And if you check out the Irish Association website, which is irishassociationspain.com, all one word, irishassociationspain.com, you will get the information that you needed. Before we go to the break, a couple of days ago, the baby names that were the most popular in Ireland were released. And everybody loves to hear baby names. Just when they grow up is the problem. Actually, we're all part of that. Anyway, the boys and girls' top names in Ireland for last year were Emily, Grace, Fia, that's F-I-A-D-H, Sophie, and Hannah. There we have it. And the top five names for the boys were Jack, James, Noah, Connor, and Daniel. So there we have it. Thought you'd be interested in that one. Now, I'm going to do a very quick break. Come back to me just after that. I'm going to talk to a fellow by the name of John Egan. And John Egan's going to tell us about two brothers. Again, in the conversation with Barbara, you heard me mention that Irish people were travelling across the world ever before the aeroplane was invented. And he's going to tell us about two brothers from County Clare who travelled in the 1700s. Yeah, 1700s to Spain. And one of them in particular made a huge impact when he got here. So come back to me in just a moment.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Every good story starts with once upon a time. And once upon a time, there were two brothers from Kilshanny in County Clare by the name of Sean and Daniel Green. Now, Daniel was the eldest, or the older, because he was born in 1683. And Sean was born in 1688, so there was 5 years between them. And I have never heard of them, even though I am living in County Clare when I'm in Ireland. And I've been living there since 1989, believe it or believe it not. And there was a fabulous presentation done in Ennisdiman during the week by the North Clare Historical Society. And John Egan from the Historical Society was the man who gave a talk on the two brothers who have a very significant past with Spain. And John joins me on the phone. John, how are you?
Very well, Ger, very well.
Firstly, John, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in the two Green brothers?
Well, I'm from the Ennisdiamond area. When I was maybe school age, I did see references to them. They're known by their Gaelic name, O'Hunin. So just to clarify, they're called O'Huni. O'Huny. It's anglicised like that in their lifetimes. And Daniel O'Huny was one of them in Spain. Now, I got interested when the time was you couldn't research anything like that. And I'm only an ordinary person and I didn't have the access that academics would have.
Right.
But with the coming of the internet and so on, I was able to look into their background.
Oh, very good. So it's been something that's been in the back of your mind for quite some time then, not suggesting that it's been quite some time since you were in school. So how long have you been stuck into this then on the internet, and how long have you been preparing what you delivered in Ennisdiamond the other evening?
I've been preparing it for about 6 months, Ger.
Why don't we start so at the start and tell us a little bit about Daniel and Sean O'Hunin, or the Green Brothers as they were known in Ireland?
Well, their father name was Walter, and their mother would have been an ancestor of the O'Connells, of Daniel O'Connell, the Liberator.
All right.
Because some of the O'Connells were transplanted to Clare in the Cromwellian period. One family was transplanted to a townland beside where they were. So I have been able to prove that their mother was one of the O'Connells.
Wow.
Now, the father was a Catholic, but he was also High Constable of Corcum Row, working for the Protestant ascendancy.
Right.
And he was riding a tiger because these were the penal times, And there were also King Billy was the King of England, and the Catholic King James had been overthrown.
Right.
So that's the context of the period.
All right.
And then Daniel went into the British Navy, and in one little brief period when there was peace between Spain and England, his ship arrived in Cadiz, and when he got off board and was waiting around by accident in the Irish community, he met a Franciscan, the chaplain of the Irish Brigade, mm-hmm. who was Father John O'Hooney, a cousin of his father's that he never knew about.
Isn't that incredible?
Exactly, exactly.
Whoa.
And the cousin said to him, Daniel, you cannot progress in the British Navy. You're a Catholic. The Test Act prevents anybody climbing up the ladder of promotion unless you're Protestant. So he persuaded him to leave the British Navy and join the Spanish Navy.
Right.
And that was okay by the captain of his ship. He paid him off. And Daniel was in Cadiz, age 30, with no word of Spanish.
Go away.
Meanwhile, his brother was at home and had become a sort of a Gaelic poet. And he had become a Jacobite, a supporter of the deposed King James II.
Right.
So this was causing, and he wrote poems, you know, to back that up, which was causing problems for his father. Because his father, as I said, was an official of the government, the Protestant government. He was actually also bailing out Catholic priests in nearby parishes who were being harassed because of the penal laws.
Right.
And then the son Sean was making trouble for him. So Sean eventually went to Spain as well.
You describe in the little piece of information that I have on the event in Ennis Diamond, you said that he was a Gaelic poet, he was an athlete, a patriot, a Jacobite, a drinker, a womanizer, an all-round rake, Kilshanny's own bowled Teddy Quill. That is a fabulous way of describing him. So he was causing a bit of trouble for the father. I suppose in those days, like writing a poem that was slagging off maybe the landlords or the Protestants, it would be like a nowadays rebel song, would it?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
Absolutely. And it'd probably be more serious, because you might get away with the rebel song now, but you wouldn't get away with it then.
Okay. Now, Daniel, in the meantime, was setting himself up in Spain. He was part of the Spanish Navy. And so was it he convinced Sean to come to Spain?
The record is patchy, Ger. So what we do think, from what I can find so far, is that when situation got too hot for the brother Sean, he knew his brother was in the Spanish Navy and he went to Spain. And we can find him registered as a volunteer with the Limerick Regiment of the Irish Brigade. And then he disappears from view.
Oh, really?
Forever.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. So nobody has any... Was there ever kind of rumours that he might have got into trouble? He might have had an argument with somebody or anything like that?
Well, I'm hoping we can get more information that it might turn up. But the only thing that ever emerged afterwards, Daniel, his brother, was... there are some surviving letters from Daniel home to relatives.
Right.
And at one stage he was looking to have somebody send on his coat of arms. It might have been that he was going to be honoured towards the end of his life in Spain.
Right.
And he says at one point that the ones that Sean brought with him disappeared along with everything else.
Oh.
So something must have happened to Sean. It's an intriguing way it finished, but we know no more about Sean at the moment, Ger.
Okay. Now, in your description of Daniel, you said that he was a sailor, he was an adventurer, and he was a governor in a place that a lot of Irish people may be familiar with in Spain called Ferrol. And Ferrol is a lovely, it's an industrial town, but it's actually where the English way starts for the Camino de Santiago. You can start your
All right.
Because a lot of Irish pilgrims would have sailed into Ferrol and they would have walked the 120 miles from there to Santiago. I've done that particular one. That's how I know about it.
But all right.
He was also an admiral in the Spanish Navy, and you say that he's Kilshanny's own Horatio Hornblower or Jack Aubrey. So he obviously had a distinguished career, and what do we know about that?
We have to give him great credit because he had no Spanish when he started. So he had to work his way up along as a foreigner. And then in those days, status was very important in military and naval affairs.
Yeah.
And he was a nobody. And the fact that he managed to achieve what he did as a nobody is great credit to himself. Now, he began with campaigns. When he joined the Navy, he was sent to Barcelona as a base.
Right.
And he campaigned to recover the island of Las Palmas in the Balearics, and he sailed then to recover the island of Sardinia, and then he was promoted and he worked protecting shipping off the Atlantic coast of Spain, and then he escorted the Treasure Fleet galleons home from the Spanish Americas to Cadiz.
Right.
Also then there was a great campaign launched by Spain to rid the Mediterranean of pirates and privateers who infested the North African coast. And he was part of an expedition that sailed from Alicante and captured the Algerian town of Oran, which was the headquarters of the pirates. And he was unlucky in that the admiral of the pirates managed to sink Daniel's ship, and he was shipwrecked in an Algerian bay.
Wow.
That was his first shipwreck of many. So before he actually finished his career in Spain, there's a very interesting incident. He was escorting a treasure fleet from Havana home to Cadiz.
Right.
And in 1750, and they were hit by an enormous hurricane just out by Cape Canaveral is now where the American space launches are on the Florida coast. And the ships were driven up the Atlantic coast of what's now the United States. And most of them were wrecked on the outer barrier islands of the Carolinas. But Daniel's ship was driven ashore on coastal islands off Maryland.
Right.
And he had horses and soldiers on board. And the horses jumped ashore. And their descendants are still there. They're famous because they've given rise to a classic of American children's literature by Marguerite Henry and filmed by Disney.
All right.
Called Misty of Chincoteague. And every year the horses are swam across from the islands to the mainland, and they're owned nowadays by the Fair Department of the nearby towns, and the saleable ones are sold, and the money is used to buy fire brigades and safety equipment for the nearby towns. And this is an annual event where about 70,000 people turn up to see the horses being swam across and swam backwards afterwards. The event takes a whole week.
Wow. And this is done in honour of what happened at that time?
It's done because the horses are still there. And they're typical Palomino Spanish piebald horses.
Beautiful. Beautiful, absolutely. John, he was a fair age at that stage because he was born in 1683, and you said that this happened in 1750, so he would have been 67. So he stayed a long time.
It was one of his last big adventures. He was, of course, a formality always happens when a ship is lost that the captain is court-martialed.
Oh.
And that happens always, and usually they're exonerated when obviously a hurricane was the cause of it.
Right.
So we have some documents in the Spanish archives from the court-martial. That's why we're able to find something about him nowadays.
Okay.
And then there was an engagement, a legal engagement between the Spanish government and the English government in America as to who owned the rights of the sunken ships and so on.
Right.
And his evidence and his name. And an interesting thing is the name of his ship at that time was the Nuestra Señora de Mercedes.
Oh.
Because all Spanish ships have saints' names. But the sailors know them by a nickname. And the nickname of his ship was La Galga, which is the Greyhound.
Oh.
And he was nearly the scanner man, Ger, where the coursing is, you know.
Oh, that's incredible. Fascinating.
He might have named his He might have named his ship for the Greyhounds himself,
you
know?
He may have done. How did he end up his time then? Because he died in 1771.
Well, when his main adventures were over, he was made governor of the military and naval department in Ferrol.
Right.
He was getting promotions all his life. And he was made a vice admiral at that stage. And about a year later, the governor of the main whole area around Ferrol retired. And Daniel was promoted admiral and made governor of the region. Wow. And then about three years later, he retired and he appealed to the authorities to let him go to Cadiz. He found the weather a bit too like Kilshanny in Ferrol.
And he would have been right there, so he would.
Yeah. He went to the sunny southwest, yeah. And he lived a couple of more years, and he died, and he's buried in Isla de León. It's out on the bay from the harbour of Cadiz.
Wow.
There was 2,204 masses said for him. 204.
Wow.
He never married, I should say.
Right.
And we have no record of Sean being married. And they had one other brother who became a priest. And Daniel sent him home a chalice, which was still in use in Killisboglanan near Kilshanny in Liscannor 100 years ago. We even have a photograph of it, but I couldn't find it. Priests looked for it everywhere, but we couldn't find it.
Not to worry.
So he did write home. We know something about his relations. And he sent home money regularly.
Right.
And he had some relatives visit him in Spain as well.
That's always the case, isn't it? Right. And tell me, how come we never heard of this man before or his brother?
Well, because there are no records. There are no records. The aim of the society, the North Clare Historical Society, which meets every month in the winter, and somebody does a talk about something that isn't widely known, and to make it more generally known, they're usually things of local interest.
Yeah, of course.
So that was my reason and the society's reason in having that talk last week.
Fantastic. And it was my good friend Roger Comiskey, who was a Joycean. Roger happened to be in the area and he went along and he told me about it. It sounded like a fascinating event. You're having extremely bad weather, John, in Ireland at the minute, but had you a good turnout in Ennistymon?
We had a very good turnout there on an absolutely horrendous night. The feedback I got was good, you know?
Excellent. Are you going to continue digging to see what else you can get from?
Oh, yeah. Yes, there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
And the fact that that more people know about it now may get other people interested, because some people may actually be descendants or relatives, because he had three sisters who married. So there are no direct male descendants, but there may be many in the female line.
It's been fantastic learning a little bit about Sean and a lot about Daniel O'Hoonin. They were known as the Green Brothers back in Kilshanny. John, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us about it.
Thanks for having me, Ger.
Routin' doutin' diddly outin', routin' doutin' die, and a routin' doutin' diddly outin', deetin' doutin' do, that were a dump, doutin' routin' dum, a routin' deetin' die, further a do, a dither, a routin' doutin' diddly outin' die. A routin' doutin' diddly outin', routin' doutin' die, and a routin' doutin' diddly outin', deetin' doutin' do, that were a dump, doutin' routin' dum, a routin' deetin' die, further a do, a dither, a routin' doutin' diddly outin' die. A routin' doutin' diddly outin', routin' doutin' die, and a routin' doutin' diddly outin', deetin' doutin' do, that were a dump, doutin' routin' dum, a routin' deetin' die, further a do, a dither, a routin' doutin' diddly outin' die. I am a little beggar man, a beggin' I have been for three score and more in this little isle of green. I'm known from the Liffey down to Seguin, and I'm known by the name of old Johnny Doo. Of all the trades that's going, I should beggin' is the best, for when a man is tired, he can sit down and rest. He can beg for his dinner, he has nothing else to do, only cut around the corner with his old rig-a-doo. A routin' doutin' diddly outin', I slept in the barn, right down a caravan. A wet night came on and I slept till the dawn, with holes in the roof and the rain coming through, and the rats and the cats, they were playing peekaboo. When who did awaken but the woman of the house, with her white spotty apron and her calico blouse. She began to frighten and I said, boo, Ara, don't be afraid, mam, it's only Johnny Doo. I met a little
flaxy-haired girl one day. Good morning, little flaxy-haired girl, I'd say. Good morning, little beggar man, and how do you do? With your rags and your tights and your old rigadoo. I'll buy you a pair of leggings and a collar and a tie, and a nice young lady I'll fetch by and by. I'll buy you a pair of goggles, the colour them blue, and an old-fashioned lady I will make her too. Packed on me back, over the fields with me great heavy sack, with holes in me shoes and me toes peeping through, singing skinny-rink-a-doodle-o and old Johnny Doo. I must be going to bed, for it's getting late at night, the fire's all raked and out goes the light. So now you've heard the story of me old rig-a-doo, it's goodbye and God be with you, says old Johnny Doo.
Wonderful stuff, isn't it? I mentioned to you earlier that Finbar Clancy of the High Kings was born on the 5th of March in 1970. His birthday is this week. He was in there with the rest of the High Kings, and that's a great song called The Little Beggar Man. And thank you to John Egan for a fascinating story on the O'Hooney brothers, the Green brothers from Kilshanny in County Clare. It's amazing the connections. Every week we find new connections, don't we, between Ireland and Spain. And the O'Hooney brothers managed to escape attention for a long, long time because there was no records. The interweb and all that kind of thing. Right, got to take a quick break. Come back to me just after that for the fourth and final part of the programme. But there's still plenty to come because we have to play the number one song in Ireland on this day back in 1979. And there's other bits to do as well, so don't go anywhere.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
I like to bring you the Irish number one from a particular year when we're on the radio. And today we're going to go back to 1979. And I was amazed to find this, because 1979 was a period when we had started in Ireland to very much follow the British charts lead. And it's very difficult to find number ones that are Irish, kind of from the late 70s right through to the 90s. And I managed to find this from 1979, when I suppose there was still a great love of the old Irish songs and the new stuff as well. And people would have been buying records of all genres, and tapes and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, this man only passed away early last year, I think it was, or maybe around summertime. And I was saddened, as indeed a lot of people were, to know that he had passed away. He had spent most of his last years in the United States, where he was still working, and he used to come back to Ireland on a regular basis. But his name is Danny Doyle, and he's had a number of number one hits in Ireland down through the years. But on this day in 1979, Danny was sitting pretty at the top of the Irish charts with this song.
Raised on songs and stories, heroes of renown, are the passing tales and glories that once was Dublin town. The hallowed halls and houses, the haunting children's rhymes, that once was part of Dublin in the rare old times. Ring-a-ring, rosy, as the light declines, I remember Dublin city in the rare old. My name it is Sean Dempsey, as Dublin as can be, born hard and late in Pimlico, in a house that ceased to be. By trade I was a cook, bar, lost out to redundancy, like my house that fell to progress, my trade to memory. And I called it Peggy Dignan, as pretty as you please. Oh, a rogue and a child of Mary, from the rebel liberties. I lost her to a student lad, with skin as black as gold, when he took her off to Birmingham. She took away my soul. Ring a rosy, as the light that climbs. I remember Dublin city in the rare old times. How the years have made me bitter. Drink has dimmed my brain, for Dublin keeps on changing, and nothing seems the same. The metropole and pillar are gone, the royal long since pulled down, as the grey unyielding concrete makes a city of my town. So fare thee well, my Anna Liffey. I can no longer stay and watch the new glass gauges that rise up along the quay. My mind's too full of memories. Won't hear new chimes. I'm a part of what was Dublin in the rare old times. Ring a rosy, as the light that climbs. I remember Dublin city in the rare old. Ring a rosy, as the light that climbs. I remember Dublin city in the rare old times.
He does a lovely version of it, doesn't he? Absolutely. Danny Doyle was at number one in Ireland on this day with that song, The Rare Old Times. That's it, no? And that's our lot for today. As per usual, if you would like to get in contact with me, Ger, G-E-R, at TRE.radio is the contact address, the email address that's the best way to get in contact, particularly if you have an old bit of news of something that's happening or coming up that you think the Irish audience might be interested in. But sure, look, we know it's not just Irish people that listen to the programme. So whatever it is that you think might be of interest, give us an old shout, let me know, and I'll see what I can do for you. Give it a mention or maybe do a little piece on it on the programme. Can I say thank you to our guests today, John Egan, who talked to us brilliantly about the O'Hooney brothers from Kilshanny and Spain. Can I say thank you to Barbara Wood from Tourism Ireland in Madrid. And as always, thank you to our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor, Jose Antonio Sierra. And of course, today I must include in that Roger Comiskey and his wife Dolores, who are in Ireland at the moment. But thank you to Roger for always keeping an eye out for something that might be of interest to the programme. And that's who managed to bring us John Egan on this particular programme. So there we go. But most of all, thank you for listening. I hope that you will join me again next week on the programme for another Live on Era. And sure, look, if anyone asks you what you were doing between 6 and 7 on Monday, and if you enjoyed the programme, be sure and tell them you were listening. And if you didn't enjoy it, say you were having your tea, will you? something like that. Right, going to finish with this particular man. He's a legend, absolutely. Nice to go out on a noisy note. Rory Gallagher, well, we would have marked his birthday on this very day because he was born on the 2nd of March back in 1948 in Donegal. He was born. Here's a song called Moonchild. Until next week, from me, Ger Sweeney, look after yourselves and each other. Bye-bye now.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.